Hello and welcome to a brand new season of the Blue Toon Podcast. We're still weekly, we're still unofficial, and we're still dedicated to all things Peterhead FC. The Blue Toon Podcast is sponsored by Marcos Chibar. I'm Colin Byers, and joining me again for the new season is Martin Smith. Martin, welcome along again.
Thank you very much.
It's good to be back.
Certainly is. Not our usual Tuesday night, but yeah, it's good to be back recording with you, so hopefully looking forward to an exciting season.
We almost kind of made a mess with it straight away there. It's been a while.
It'll take a while to get back into the sink of things, won't it?
Right, Ed. As you know, everybody that's been coming on in the podcast in the last few months, I've asked this question of them, so I'm going to ask you as well. The 2020 question, how has lockdown been for you?
You know what, in fairness, it hasn't actually been that bad. All things put aside, you know, still been busy at work, so... For me, nothing's really changed and that sort of thing. We still go to work, still try to keep ourselves safe. But in all honesty, nothing really has changed.
No, I think, generally speaking, apart from the kids being off school and being homeschooling, I think pretty much has been the same for me as well.
Have you newfound respect for teachers?
I have a newfound respect for teachers and for stay-at-home parents and all that kind of jazz. It's been an experience. Before the summer holidays, even during the summer holidays, because a lot of stuff was still locked down as such, you couldn't do a lot of things.
Yeah.
So, apart from that, and I didn't have much of a social life before lockdown anyway, so it didn't really affect me. Apart from obviously missing out the football, but yeah, not much different. Things we think it was progressing, but we seem to kind of taking a step back slightly. You did miss the football, obviously. You missed that kind of. Going and meeting people and seeing people that you don't maybe necessarily see every day. So that's the kind of things you miss.
It's sort of part of your week, isn't it? You sort of look forward to the football at a weekend, whether it be home or away, it's something to look forward to, and that's sort of been taken away from us in the last couple of months.
Yeah, and you might come away regretting going, but...
it's the day out as well, as it, isn't it? You're meeting friends and family, enjoying a sociable drink, and yeah. the football is just part of your day. Regardless of the result.
Just a sociable half shandy.
Of course, nothing more.
Right, we should start by thanking all those guys that have come on in the last few months. The players and former players as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was good of them to take time out their schedules to come on to our podcast. So we want to thank them wholeheartedly for coming on.
Yeah, absolutely. Echo them comments. You know, some of the recordings we've put out have maybe been an hour, but we could quite easily have gone 3-4 hours speaking to some of the guys, listening to some of the stories. Even the past players and current players have all got different sort of stories on how things go with training, their the build-up to games. It's been really good to listen to some of them as well. Really pleasing.
Yeah, and it's, I don't know about you, but it was a good exercise for me because it gave us something to do, to look forward to. Just even because sometimes you were just kind of sat twiddling your thumbs kind of thing, so you know, going to work, coming home, and that was it. But these things were something to look forward to. I really enjoyed them. Even looking back on some of the things that the players mentioned, you tended to forget, and I think sometimes the things that we mentioned as well, the players had forgotten about as well, the past players. So it was good. It was good to kind of get a grasp of what was like for the current players that were playing tail end of last season, what their thoughts were before obviously things had decided that was that the season was going to be closed. So it was a good exercise all around, I think.
Yeah, it was obviously it was a new experience for everyone, players and fans. You know, football just sort of came to quite an abrupt halt. And you know, some of the players that we spoke to, they said it was good for them to come on and speak as well. It kept them busy and almost like a trip down memory lane with the last couple of seasons and their careers as well. So, like you said, it was a good exercise for us. I think the players enjoyed it. We got positive feedback. Even the ex-players as well, they've said that they've enjoyed coming on. So, overall, very good. And again, we thank them for taking time out of their schedules to come on and speak to us.
And the question is, did you learn anything?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, every player or ex-player that's come on, there's something that they've said that you've either forgotten about or you didn't know, or obviously we do research on some of the guys from before they come on, and there's some things that they'll say and you think, how have I managed to miss that? But then you look at it in more detail and you think it would have been something, again, and it adds more time. You could have spent another half hour, another hour speaking on that one person about that topic. So it was really good to learn more about players' careers and ex-players.
And what was good from my perspective was that they were all extremely open. Nobody kind of shirked any questions. We obviously asked him prior, was there anything you didn't want us to speak about? And nobody said, no, just carry on. I think Andy McCarthy was a perfect example of that. He had no qualms about speaking about his recent problems he's had with gambling, etc. So, I mean, that's the kind of things you want to see for everybody.
Yeah, I think that one, you know, when we came off the recording, we spoke about that a little bit afterwards, and we said how open he was, because it's quite a personal thing, and also you're putting it all over social media. We spoke to him prior to the recording what would happen in terms of putting out the content. So I think for his point of view, it was good for him to talk as well. You could see he's sort of relaxed as well when he's speaking. I think he's sort of accepted he had problems. He's now dealing with it or dealt with it as best he can. And hopefully that'll encourage more people if they're struggling to speak out as well.
Yeah, that's the thing. You might just spark somebody into doing something, and that's what it's all about. Kind of just speaking and being open. And it's been a difficult time for everybody through this. I guess things like that are added 10 times. You know, if you're suffering from depression or any of that kind of things.
We're sort of fortunate in the sense that, you know, we go to work, we're still sort of into our routine, we're still interacting with people. But for some people, you know, they have been locked in, even if they've been shielded, they're stuck away from people for days, weeks, even months sometimes. So I can imagine it gets very difficult for certain people. So it was good that he was able to speak, and hopefully, like I said, it helps other people out as well.
Yeah, and we should say as well that we still have more former players lined up as well for future episodes. So the plan is we're going to have at least one per month. Almost as like a special coming up, so keep an eye out on our social media for them. We've got a few goodies lined up as well, so hopefully there's more stories from past glories as the months go on.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we have got a few that we're hoping to get on the next couple of months, and it's good that they're taking the time out as well, because obviously things are, we hope, slowly getting back to whatever normality will be over the next couple of months. You know, they've got things on as well. So it's juggling everybody's time together, and hopefully get another few episodes out.
Yeah, so let's kind of, I don't know how long this is going to take, but let's kind of recap slightly of what's been happening in the last 6 months, because it's been a while since we've actually started doing and chatted about it properly. I think the last time we actually spoke on an episode like this, league reconstruction was still on the table. It was on the table, it was off the table, it was on the table, it was off the table. I would say briefly, but maybe it won't be briefly, but tell us what your thoughts have been for the last 6 months and how the things have been kind of handled.
Oh, what a saga it was it? It was a bit of a disaster. Everything that could go wrong did seem to go wrong. It seemed from the outside the perfect chance for league reconstruction. Some were for it, some were against it. Everybody's got their own opinions of it. I think, in my opinion, me personally, I think it was a perfect time to have a reconstruction. I think the changing the format of it would have helped as well, bringing Kelty and Brora up. I know there's reasons that some people don't want them in the league. We've seen Kelty spending quite big lately. But on hindsight, it's probably a reason why some clubs didn't want them in. I also think the person in charge of it, and Budge, I made my opinion very clear in March. I didn't think she was cut out to do it. I still didn't. I think anything that she touches seems to go wrong. And the fact that Hearts' owner was part of the league reconstruction, but her team had been relegated, just didn't sit comfortable with me. I never thought that there was going to be an occasion, or a situation, sorry, that would be solved with her leading the charge. But no, it was a bit of a farce. Even the voting system, you know, Dundee hadn't voted, SPFL said the head. It was just about a shambles from start to finish, really.
Yeah, and not only was Anne Budge in charge of the reconstruction, but the Brechin chairman was on the reconstruction board as well. A team who probably, in all fairness, should have been relegated and probably would have been relegated had they faced Brora or Kelty in a playoff, because without seeing them up close and personal last season, I would think at Kelty or Brodie probably would have beaten them.
I'd have thought so. They were the ones that had the momentum going forward. Brechin, they were on a horrendous run. They've been relegated twice, back-to-back.
Back-to-back, so it should have been three.
Three in a row. I don't know, could that be some sort of record? I don't know, it's something we'll look into afterwards. But it was just a disaster from start to finish. And the folk that were involved in the negotiations and the process of it, I don't think it was the right personnel. I do think that maybe, you kind of just handpick people a day, but I do think those who had less of an impact on it, you know, a team that maybe finished mid-table championship, League One, League Two, I think their opinion should have been taken into consideration as well. But again, that's probably a political sort of thing getting involved there.
Do you sympathise with Partick Thistle and Stranraer and Hearts to an extent that they've gotten relegated even though the season was curtailed early?
Oh yeah, absolutely, because I think we both agreed start of March when we spoke about it, no team should be impacted negatively based on the global pandemic. So I do feel hard for them, but at the same time, they were in those positions in the league for a reason. You know, they had been there for the best part of 6 months. I'm not saying neither of the teams would have got themselves out of it. Was it Partick Thistle that were one game in hand?
They're a game in hand. They were a point behind, 2 points behind.
Say they could have won that. You know, it completely changes it. But I do feel some sympathy for them. But they were bottom of the respective tables for a reason.
And what did you make of one of the potential league reconstructions that was made, where we were going to expand to a 14-14-14?
For me, it was a great idea. I think there was a few ideas that was branded about that was quite absurd. I think that was one of them. I do think Brodie and Kelty coming up was the better option, but again, it wasn't voted through, unfortunately.
And it would have been easy for them just to come up. You could have expanded the Premier League to a 14. You could have made a 14-10-10-10. And if the Premier League wanted to go back to a 12, that would have been easy enough to do. Next season as well, it'd been easy to rectify. You would have then had 2 12s and 2 10s, and then if the 2 12s was successful, you could then encourage that to follow on. So you could then have more. You need to see more of this pyramid scheme or system, I should say, in place and working properly to allow teams from the Lowland League and the Highland League to come up, and within sort of 5 6 years' time, you could actually have 4 12s. All playing this split league.
The 14 and 3 10s meant that nobody was impacted negatively.
No.
That's why I was surprised that it didn't go through, because I generally thought that the clubs and the SPFL would be quite happy for nobody to be impacted. And again, like you said, you could look at it next season or let it roll for a couple of years, see how they get up, how everybody adjusts. At the moment, it seems if you win the Lowland League or the Highland League, that is... okay, there is the prize of winning the title, but then that is it. There is no, you know, they can't get promoted into League Two. And I think that is, in my opinion, that is poor. I think that if you win the league, you should get promoted in the same way. If you finish bottom of League Two, you've been the worst team of the season. You need to go down the division. And I do think that is something that was a perfect opportunity to look into just now. But again, it never happened.
There are teams in League Two that have been in League Two for many years.
Yeah.
Even before the introduction of the playoff and allowing the Highland League and Lowland teams to potentially come up, there were teams that were in Division 3 or League 2, whatever you want to call it, and they were quite happy just to coast by season because they were never going to get relegated. And they knew that from the get-go. They were never going to get promoted. They were never going to be challenging, and they were never going to get promoted. So they were obviously just filling in space. Now that you've got teams like Brora, Kelty, to extent you've got Cove have come through as well and are doing well, these teams are suddenly thinking, if we fall out of the league, we could be out of the league for a long time. You just look at East Stirlingshire when they dropped out. Yeah. Are they going to get back anytime soon? Unlikely. You never know.
Yeah, I think when teams do drop out, they're also worried that they want to get back in. But I think it adds that mere competitive edge if every team knows at the start of the season, right, there's promotion and relegation. Because at the moment, League Two, if you are, argument's sake, say mid-table come Christmas sort of time, unless you have a really poor run or a really good run, you're going to get promoted and you're going to get relegated. But the fact that there's no relegation, there's a lot of teams happy to make up numbers, as you say, they're just sauntering through the season. And again, that competitive edge isn't there in some of the games, you'd imagine.
And the fact that they have a second chance to stay up rather than have been relegated automatically, and then we say ninth gets a playoff place, it tells you all you need to know about how the league is run.
Yeah, that's why I think the reconstruction should have happened. It's a bit like the top six bottom split in the top four. Like, the games, you know, you can finish in seventh place with 50 points, but a team in sixth could finish the season on 47. It just, I don't know, it just doesn't sit well. I know that they're trying to make the games competitive towards the end of the season, where the bottom six and top six play each other and you're fighting out for Europe titles, relegation, whatever. But it just, it's a bit of a shambles.
I think what was interesting that it came out of it was the fact that, I know sometimes we kind of bemoan the fact that we're playing the same team four times in a league campaign. But what seemed to come out of that was that the players and the clubs themselves actually like playing each other four times for whatever reason. So there's obviously a disparity between what the fans like and want and what the actual teams and the players are looking for as well. So I think this 10 thing was always going to be sticking around it at some point. But you need to try and get... We really need to try and get Brora in and Kelty in.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, they put out statements, I think both of them did, after it was decided that league reconstruction was going to happen. And rightly so, they were disappointed. I don't think I've seen much of the Brechin, whether they've said anything on the marks, so they could have got relegated, but obviously their chairman's on the board, so maybe not. I keep saying it, league reconstruction for me should have happened. It was a perfect opportunity to do it. I think they've said that they would look at it again at some point, you know, when is the ideal time? You know, football stopped in March and it didn't look like there was going to be football for a couple of months, and there wasn't. If that's now the right time to look at it and sit down and try and figure out if it is the best way forward for Scottish football in general, I don't think again when would be.
And what's going to change people's minds within a year or 2 years? You know, they've made their decision, whether we like it or not, they've made a decision for their own personal needs or basis. So how are they going to change their minds? They're probably not.
I think the fact that football, especially in the Premiership, it is quite expensive. You know, you try and you go along the football, it's an expensive day out. And if you get to, if you play in the Cup against Premier League teams playing each other, you end up having a replay and you finish in the top six. I think you can play each other like seven times. I don't know at what point a fan would turn and go, yeah, I really want to see, for argument's sake, Aberdeen Kilmarnock for the seventh time this season. And the money is quite expensive. There doesn't seem to be that drive to welcome new supporters in football either. You know, are we going to see the same amount of attendances when everything does sort of get back to whatever normal be? Let's argument's sake say in 3 years' time, is the attendances still going to be the same roughly what Aberdeen Kilmarnock would have been this last season compared to in 3 years' time? I just don't think there's that incentive to bring supporters through based on the quality of football in the park, the amount of times you're playing each other. I just don't think it matches up.
Yeah, and mentioned the Premier League, they're back playing already.
Yeah.
Without fans, it's the same as what happened down in England. They finished the season off, they're back playing again without fans. Have you watched any of the games without the fans? If you have, what's been your opinion on it?
I watched a few of the games on the Premier League restart in England. Find it very difficult to watch without spectators. I know they put in that canned crowd noise. I think that made it worse because of the fact that you can, there's nobody there. I've seen a few of the Scottish games. Again, it's really difficult to watch without a crowd. I think some of the games you notice it with the players as well, they thrive off a crowd normally, and the fact that the crowds aren't there, that makes it difficult to see the quality in the park. yeah, the sooner fans are back in safely, the better.
I mean, the phrase that gets banded about quite a bit, and has been banded about quite a bit, is it's like a friendly. Every game is like a friendly because there's no atmosphere at all. It is like a friendly, and I think that reflects, as you said, on the players on the pitch as well, because they've got nothing to kind of bounce off of or react to. If there's a 50-50 or something like that, the fans cheer or they get stuck in. And they make the noise, whereas there's absolutely nothing happening. You might as well go to the park and watch your local team there.
Yeah, it is difficult to watch through. You hear some of the managers and coaches at the sideline, you know, trying to G the players on. I'm sure that happens, you know, when there's fans there anyway, but even more so you hear it now, and you think players are struggling in some games. To get motivated. I know as a professional they will be motivated to play, but you know the fans give you that extra added essence to go and play, and as you said, if there's a 50-50 excuse me, and the crowd get up for it, that can encourage you for the next 5-10 minutes, and again that plays an impact.
They always say a crowd makes a difference. It gives them a slight advantage, you know, if it's a home crowd or an away crowd or whatever it is, it does make a hell of a difference.
Oh yeah, I don't think anybody can deny that. Was it Germany in the restart? There was more away wins than there was home wins through the so-called project restart, and it just shows you the impact and the crowds can make, that there's a lot more away than home wins. So I don't know whether that's the same in Scotland. I doubt it in the Premier League, but again, it shows there is some results creeping in. You think maybe wouldn't have happened before, but again, that lack of crowd maybe plays a part.
Yeah, and Germany's quite a boisterous home crowds anyway, so I think you're probably right.
Yeah.
It would make a difference. So the question is then, as we can approach the start of the new season, Peterhead's first home game is the Betfred Cup against Dundee United, which is away from home. We've then got kick off the league campaign away from home again, so it's like the 24th before we actually have a home game. So do you think by that time we'll have fans back, and is it viable for them not to have fans?
If you'd asked me this question 2 weeks ago, I would have been quite optimistic that fans would be allowed back in. I think the fact that in today there was the highest rate of coronavirus cases since early May, I think it was. I don't think fans will be back in for October. Even a select few for a Peterhead game, but I don't think it's viable for League 1, League 2 clubs, probably even some Championship clubs, or maybe them all, to play football without a crowd. I don't think that's viable.
It actually makes it worse for teams like Falkirk and Park Thistle and that, who are full-time playing in League 1, and probably to extent as well Hearts in the Championship. They've got wages to pay. I know every other club has wages to pay as well, but they've got full-time wages to pay. So they're going to be even more impacted, I think, than the League One teams who are part-time in the League Two teams.
Yeah. I think one of the things that was quite surprising is there was test events at Ross County in Aberdeen just this last weekend. But at this moment in time, cases are on the increase. I don't think, as much as we would love it to have spectators in at football, I don't think that is our main priority at the moment. I know everybody wants to get back to some sort of normality. We all want to go back to watch our team play. But then I think they were socially distanced, everything was in place for it. It was a test event, that's why there was only 300 people. But I don't think that was necessary at this moment in time. I know clubs have got wages and everything to pay for. The furlough scheme's coming to an end at the end of this month,
End of October, I think it is, but there's word that might get extended,
you know,
to some kind of extent.
I wouldn't want for football to rush back and then everything get delayed potentially 6 months, where if we maybe wait until, argument's sake, say middle of November, and then slowly get people back, then as long as it's safe, then I think that's maybe an option come November.
But we have to get back playing, though. Regardless if it's with or without fans, we have to get the the league back, we have to get the teams back playing again.
Yeah, I would agree. But if it's not sustainable for the clubs, you know, that's maybe a different issue altogether. But I don't think, if we take Peterhead for argument's sake, I don't think we can say, right, let's get back to playing football in October and November, but we're going to make a loss every game we're playing because there's no crowd there. It's a difficult situation. It's a situation no one's been in. You know, it's completely new to everyone, but there's got to be common sense applied as well.
Common sense in Scottish football didn't go hand in hand, I'm afraid.
No, unfortunately not, but I do think they've got to be careful. They can't just allow FITBA to start Championship League 1 and League 2. You know, there's testing to be done. There's, you know, players are travelling from all different parts of Scotland to come together to play football. Is that necessary at the moment, when at the moment we're only allowed two households to meet outside and a maximum of six? And this is where, as much as I want football to come back, it's got to be done safely.
Yeah. So as we kind of approach, as we said, we've got the League Cup fixtures. We'll talk about that more next week, and the actual league as well. We'll talk a bit more on that next week. But we'll get your thoughts on the squad as it is.
Yeah.
Again, we'll hopefully by the next episode we'll have a lot more players have arrived then. But at the moment, as things stand, we have a squad of 13. Which, by any stretch of the imagination, is nowhere near enough.
No, I am concerned that we might be asked to play if the squad stays at this level. Need to get the boots again for the cupboard. But yeah, we are light, especially at the back. There is a lot of players that have left. I'm sure Jim has got players that he's watching. I think it'll be interesting over the next couple of weeks. I think Premiership teams will now be assessing their squads and whether there is optional loan players coming in. That might be an option as well, but I certainly think at the back we are very, very light.
It's so much so light, in fact, that the Trialist brothers have been making an appearance. There's been a few. We'll wait and see if any of those actually get signed up permanently. The names that's been bandied about are decent players who could probably add something to the squad as well. So we'll wait and see. As you said, Jim's probably making tracks.
Yeah.
But as is tradition for Peterhead, they seem to do their business quietly and in the background.
Yeah, the only time that, you know, it's really on social media or anything from the club is when the deal's done, which is, you know, probably the best way to go about things. I'm sure he's got his targets in mind. He is looking at one or two, as you said, there was trialists in for the game the other night. So if they've come through it and Jim's happy, I'm sure he'll try and get them on board. You know, the players that we spoke to, everybody said Peterhead is a really good club to come and play for. You're well looked after. So I'm sure that if Jim's trying to get a few boys in, they'll be well more than welcome.
I think the obvious part of the squad that needs to be looked at is at the back.
Yeah,
we've got one goalkeeper and we've got two defenders. That's it.
I mean, they're sure to start if that's the squad that we're going with.
Yeah, aye.
You know, that's a positive. But yeah, we are light. But at the same time, the players left quite early on when their contracts expired. So I'm sure, you know, it wouldn't have come out of the blue for Jim. He's probably been planning this for the last couple of months, and I'm sure he's got targets in mind. Again, the Premiership teams will be weighing up their options just now, so he might be waiting on a little bit of movement there as well to try and get people in.
I mean, how annoyed would you be if you were Lenny Wilson and he decides to stick Jason Brown in goals or something instead?
Yeah, I think that'd be a wee bit harsh.
Again, we'll maybe touch on that a wee bit in next week, but Isaac Lane, obviously, he's going to be a big impact player. I think he's going to do really well. I was impressed with him last season and when we saw him when we played in Barton. I think he scored a winner in that 3-2 game early on when we were 3-0 up, so he's a big lad. He's probably it's been something that we've been missing for even though Rory was there. He's been it's a position we've been lacking in.
I'm really pleased with signing him because in the politest possible way, he was a pain in the backside to play against. His movement is really good as well. He takes centre halves out of position, sort of drags them out and leaves space for players to run on. I think he'll be a really good signing. If he's getting this service from the wide areas and ball into feet in front of goal, I think he will do a really good job.
It'll be interesting to see as well. Obviously, we've still got Ben Armour, we've still got Stephen Boyd. Derek Lyles signed on again for his 50th season as a player, it would seem. But it'd be interesting to see if he does decide to bring in another forward, if that means he's going to play with the two, or if he's going to stick with the one, because I think Lane would obviously play better as the one. I don't think you could probably ask Armour or Boyd to be that one, that focal point. So it'd be interesting to see if he does decide to play two again and have one of them playing off of Lane, maybe.
I think it's a big season for Ben Armour because, we spoke before, there was Ben and Aidan Smith and I was quite pleased with both of them. They were sort of breaking through. So I would like to see Ben Armour given a chance this season. Whether Jim goes with two up top, I'm not convinced. Again, he's not that keen on it. But I do think Lane and Ben Armour could work. They're both energetic and pacey guys. I think that could work. Again, if you're getting the support down the wings, that could be a good combination.
And I think the key thing was as well that we managed to secure Scott Brown again for another season, although maybe looked like we weren't going to have him.
Because
it was tweeted out that he stayed and then it was deleted and then we were kind of in the dark for a wee while and then all of a sudden he's signing again. But the short story is that he signed up for another season, which is what we were hoping for anyway.
Yeah, as you said, 1 minute the tweet's there, we check it an hour later, the tweet's gone and we're sort of wondering what's happening ourselves. But delighted that he's staying. I think that's a key indicator as well that, he's sticking around. Very good player. We've said where midfield is arguably up there with the top ones in the division. I think the fact that we've managed to keep them, that nucleus in midfield, will help us, be a springboard for the coming season, which will be very difficult.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough season. It was going to be a tough season regardless. You look at the teams that's in there, like with Park Thistle being added into the mix, Falkirk not going up, when we all thought they were probably one of the favourites to go up at the start of last season. Obviously that didn't pan out very well, but you still got Airdrie, Clyde, Dumbarton's there. I think Dumbarton surprised a lot of people last season. They may struggle because obviously losing Isaac Lane to us, but they've lost their spine of their team as well. So they might struggle a little bit. But yeah, it's going to be a hell of a season again. And we're only playing 27 games as well.
I was just a way to say it. It could be quite interesting because by the time you play the first round of games, you're sort of, midway through December. Before you know it, it's the turn of the year and that's when you're sort of in the home stretch for the league. So I think the fact that there's a game less, I think it might encourage teams to attack more in the sense of you want to try and get the points on the board early on. We've seen Montrose last year, they had a really poor start and then they sort of won 8 games in a row after putting 4 worldies past us, doing there. So I think teams will attack more because there's less games in the world. I try and get the points, but as I said last season, it's a division where anybody can beat anybody on the day, and I don't think that's any different this year.
I think as well the fact that you've got 9 games left, as you said, you've got to get off to you've got to get off to a good start. You've got to go off and get the points early doors because, as you said, you've essentially a quarter of the season has been taken away.
Yeah, I think you normally assess the season once you've played everybody once, and by that time you are sort of looking at around October time, but now you are going to be approaching the turn of the year. So again, that psychological thing that if you've played each other, you've played every team once, if you're bottom of the table, you're heading into sort of a Christmas period when there is a couple of games in close succession, then you've got any cup games that could be happening if you're still in the cup as well. I've seen the third round of the cup in January. I think teams will attack more to get the points on the board.
It'll be interesting to see if and when games get postponed in the winter time, how that affects the mentalities of teams as the season progresses. I mean, there is, in the background, there's always going to be a risk of games potentially getting postponed because of the COVID, as you've seen already in the Premier League. Celtic's games have been postponed, Aberdeen games were postponed because of that. So it'll be interesting to see how that kind of pans out for the rest in the season as well, on a season that's already been cut short.
Yeah, it'll be difficult. You know, we've seen the Premier League, some teams will have their game cancelled, some will have it been told that it's got to go ahead. I don't know what the situation will be in League 1 and League 2, whether the games will be a championship as well, whether games will be postponed, or whether you'll be told, well, that's the players that are out, you need to go with what you've got. If you've got 11 players plus a goalkeeper and a sub-goalkeeper on the bench, that's who you've got to go with. I don't think there'll be much scope in the calendar for rescheduling a lot of games. I think that could be the next issue. I think that was highlighted in the Premiership, was it? If there was European games, cup games and replays and whatnot with internationals and certain days you can't play them because of UEFA Champions League and Europa League. So maybe it wouldn't affect Scotland as much in the lower leagues, but I don't think there'll be much room for call-offs. And that's without the Scottish weather as well. You know, we've seen that a referee will abandon a game after half an hour because of the wind. It'd be interesting to see if that happens this season, if we're tight for time on the schedule.
It was an interesting thing that we've seen with Jim Goodwin the other day when he said that his game should have been postponed because he had two goalkeepers came down with COVID. He managed to get an emergency loan deal, but he pretty much said that if it had been Rangers or Celtic, the game would have been postponed. Gauging your opinion then, do you think if there's a case of maybe two or three within a club, the game should be postponed? Or do you just treat it as, well, it's like another injury of some kind?
It's difficult. You kind of do it in a case-by-case scenario, but at the same time, you don't really want a blanket. I think it would depend. I mean, I guess the St Mirren situation, for example, it was all their goalkeepers. You know, are you saying that you'd have to put an outfield player in goals to try and fulfil a fixture? It's difficult. I really think
the fact that they managed to get an emergency and they were allowed to do an emergency loan with another team to get a goalkeeper in would suggest that, you know, there are ways and means run about it. If you go back, if you turned up to a game and maybe say five Peterhead players could do with food poisoning, the game would probably still go ahead because, you know, they've a fixture to fulfil. They might have had to play, you know, with just 11. They would have no subs and maybe have to draft in some youngsters or whatever, but the game would still be played. So to that kind of extent, if you had maybe three or four out because of COVID, they'd be at home self-isolating anyway. So, you know, again, it's a situation we haven't been in before. Nobody really knows how to deal with it, but it'd be interesting to see if that kind of thing pops up during the season.
I think the other situation you'd have is not only would they miss one game, but they'd need to self-isolate for 2 weeks. So they would miss the following week fixtures as well.
Yeah.
So can you afford, not in financial sense, but in terms of the schedule, to postpone two games for four players being out through COVID? I guess it depends on the severity of the spread within the group. You know, I know sometimes it can take a few days for it to be in your system and show up, but, you know, with testing, there's been a lot of cases where a player tested positive in the Premier League and then 3 days later has been retested and a lot of them was negative. I think St Mirren, was it St Mirren early on in the season that seven players allegedly tested positive and then in the end it was actually one?
False negatives, I think they called it.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, could you postpone a game on the Thursday because you've gotten so-called positive tests and then they'll come back on the Monday saying actually it was false positives and you've lost a week? As we said, it's a difficult situation in the terms the fact that we haven't been there before, but I'm sure with Neil Doncaster in charge it will go swimmingly well.
It's a new season, but I see the sarcasm still there, though.
Yeah, it's Neil Doncaster, I'll say no more.
Well, it's good to be back to some kind of extent. We're still obviously socially distancing. We're still doing this over Zoom, but it's good to kind of be back and get back to, as we said, some kind of normality again.
Yeah, it's good speaking about Pierre Heaney and Scottish football, isn't it? I'll personally criticise it quite a bit, but it is good to be back. And all things considered, got a couple more players in, and I'm very excited for the season ahead.
Yeah, and we'll look forward to it. And as we said, hopefully we're back to the Balmour again and having a half shandy again before the game.
Socially distanced.
Socially distanced again, probably. Yeah, that would be the thing. Okay, right, thanks very much. Well, that's it for this week's episode of the Blue Tube Podcast. Our thanks go to our sponsor, Marcus Chipper, and of course to you guys for listening, as always. We'll see you all again very soon. Cheers.